Bienvenue à notre podcast Le 1% dédié aux révolutionnaires qui changent la donne. Nous discuterons avec des entrepreneurs, novateurs, des dirigeants et des penseurs qui ont réussi à établir des entreprises et des solutions qui améliorent le monde. Welcome back to the 1% podcast. Today, I'm with the legendary Tian Yang. Welcome to the 1% podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So before we start, I know that people already know your story, but I want you to present yourself to the 1% community podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I am Tian Yang. I am Senegalese and originally from Senegal. I lived in the U.S. for 15 years and so decided to go back home a few years ago to get involved in the building block of what's going on in Africa right now. Mm-hmm. Africa's under construction right now. Our countries are on shanty. So I went back to participate to agriculture, engaging young people in entrepreneurship training and all kinds of stuff and education and et cetera.
Yeah, so. Very nice. I'm happy to see you here in Montreal.
Thank you.
And the first thing that I want to talk with you is the Give One project, because now, I mean, I think it's an important thing for your history. Mm-hmm. It's now 15 years mm-hmm. for this project. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us a bit more information about this?
Yeah, Give One project is a non-profit that I started in 2009. Right after President Obama's election, he invited us to the staff ball, to everybody who worked on the campaign, who talked about how we helped our staff worked for 2 years to get him elected, and how he asked him, you know, question that changed my life, by the way, because the question was, okay, what are you going to do now with all this energy? We've learned what it takes to be a grassroots organizer, that yes, we can. Speech was inspired by those who were saying, no, we couldn't do it. With all these sacrifices and strategies and hard work, we made it a reality. Now he was asking us, now we can really go to change our communities locally, or for me, it's Ohio, or go change our the whatever is happening that we are motivated about. Some people on issues on climate change, or it's in jobs, or it's social issues, whatever it is, that you can really organize around that to affect change from the bottom up. And this spoke to me, because prior to that, I was just 8 years prior, I was coming to the United States, didn't speak the language, and had $20, I didn't have family. Mm-hmm. Went through the same regular immigrant story, you know. And then 8 years later, I was in that position, and I was thinking of, okay, there's a lot of other young people across the world who will never have the opportunity that I got. And I would like to go beyond Washington, D.C. to start something that can spark a little light of hope to those people, as it's done to me here in the U.S., those young people who will never have this kind of chances, this kind of opportunities. What can I do to give them hope and create the tools that I didn't have? I can now be in a position to create those tools, because I've learned the codes of what community organizing was about. You know, the power in organizing, the power in creating, you know, small changes repeatedly, and what it can bring you to. Then the idea of Give One project came about, you know, and I started Give One in Washington, D.C., and then in France, and then in Senegal, and today it's in 34 countries, in Jamaica, in Japan, in Benin, in Chad, I mean, in Togo, and in many, many other countries. Here in Canada, I did this in Laval University in 2015. So it's all over the world, and today it's more than 50,000 young people has been trained throughout the programs.
Wow.
And we focus on different topics that I will talk about, yeah.
Interesting. That's mm-hmm. very inspiring.
Yeah.
I love the vision.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to go to the first topic. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Me and you, we already have some conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is not enough tech people in our black community,
mm-hmm.
African or black community. Mm-hmm. There is not enough tech people. And I was wondering always myself, why people, I mean, from our community, they focus on music, on sports, but when it's about doing the next Facebook, the next Netflix, we don't have enough people, or maybe they are not visible. So What's your thought about this?
Well, it's a big concern for us because, first of all, we missed the first, the second, the third revolution. And I think at this point, we are missing also another big revolution, is the tech industry right now. It doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of people who are interested in tech, who are already working on tech. I think we have enough people that are working on tech, mm-hmm. somehow, especially in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. But the problem we got here, we are not visible because we are lacking what everybody else has, which means that what every community is doing very well, we are very poor in doing that, meaning we don't know how to work together yet. Because if you look at, for example, the PayPal mafia, and you mm-hmm. see all these, you know, tech folks from around, you know, the United States and extra working together to create the next big things in Silicon Valley and etc., that makes you wonder, like, okay, where are we in this picture? Why aren't we in the middle of these things? Like, where is our tech mafia, the way our community is getting involved to creating the next big thing, not only for us, but the world. And this will have to come from different angles. The first will be to have a strong education system in our systems of education. Here you have it, but in the diaspora in Africa, most of our countries, we are focusing on education still on the colonial way, where we got from colonization, meaning focusing on sociology, philosophy, history, things like that. Nothing wrong with that, but the world has changed today. Because the world has changed, there's different needs that the economy needs, that the different job offers, the different role that if you want to prepare the next future entrepreneurs or next future workers, the next future whatever, you cannot do it without science and technology. You have to invest heavily in science and technology. And until now, if you go to Africa, we are not focusing on science and technology in most of our schools. And this is a big problem for us because what's going to happen is we're going to continue to just download and download and download using, you know, what other people are doing, but we'll never be able to upload what somebody else is going to use. Mm-hmm. If you look at all of the hot things that's happening in Twitter technology, you know, when it comes to Instagram, TikTok, somebody else is doing them, Facebook, our telephones, whatever. You know, even our cable lines, if you go to Africa right now, the man... mobile companies are owned by usually France or UK, whatever. In my case, in Senegal, if France and free, somebody else, you know, the Cable Marines and everything, somebody is coming to install it. Because we're not preparing the next generation of young people to be the leading force of our of the future of our country when it comes to technology. That's one. The second thing is, once you start training those young people, how can you create a space where they can excel, where they can be innovative, where they can create, where they can, you know, fully, you know, bring solutions to the problems we're dealing with through technology, how they can find solutions through technology. Like the United States is so an example with Silicon Valley. It's a space they created where young people can come and excel and can just like be crazy, innovate, create, and, you know, do something that will surprise the world. China has moved towards it. That's why you see companies like Alibaba, TikTok, competing with the American companies that are doing very well. In Europe, you see in France, if you get companies like Xavier Niel is creating, you know, F, whatever it's called, that school that I visited in France, and they're creating young entrepreneurs that are creating a lot of companies and applications, incubations, and et cetera. Even in Rwanda, they're doing that right now. But many African countries, they still haven't put the focus in pushing for education and technology. So that's the second point. The third one is the commonality, how we can now really bring our forces together.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Once we have somebody like you who's good in Canada, I've met some young people from the minority groups in the United States, in Brazil, in Africa, in different countries, in France, and etc. How can we bring those forces together? Where everybody is bringing their peace so we can be stronger. This is the work that we need to be doing, and I think it's the job for all of us, so we can build more partnerships, so we don't have to continue to be the weakest link in the whole world. You know, so this is, I think this was happening right now.
That's very interesting. You know, me, when I did the Moko app for music, it was early on 2016 when the Afrobeat music was not on the top, as you see right now.
And right.
My vision was to, like, take Afrobeat music and make it visible, international, like it is right now. And I had some difficulty to have support from the right people. And so I totally connect on what you say, is that if you are more working on collaboration, it's going to be easier for us to do big things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And me, I really think that it can be possible if you have the right people. But me, my vision, it will be to very connect all the top tech guy all in Africa. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's Facebook group or if it's something, but where we're going to be all together and we can share ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you are more stronger when you have different smart people in the same room.
Exactly.
That being the only one smart guy in the room.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm.
So if you have a way to connect the top tech African guy, like, in one place, I don't know how we're going to do it, but I would like to, I mean, if they listen to the podcast, if you can all connect, I think we can do big things for Africa, you know?
That's very wonderful.
And that's an interesting topic.
Mm.
Now we're going to go to education and learning, you know? Mm. I know that you give a lot of importance in education, and me too. Mm. I'm trying to build, like, to help people doing mobile app, AI with my academy, Omenia Academy. Mm. But you, what do you think about the importance of the education for the personal developments for the future and young generation?
Extremely important. This is why, since I moved back, I focus a lot on education, because I know that's the best way we can get our people out of the state that we are, we have been for a long time. Because if we, especially the diaspora who have traveled the world and understand what's going on around the world, can transfer the knowledge that we have, transfer the competences that we got to our younger people through education, through training, through, you know, and we have to redefine what education means to, you know, because for a long time we believe that education is like you go to college, you go to, you know, 10, 15 years in school, and, you know, you're following one course and et cetera, which is good still. But in Africa, we need a lot of different ways of educating our people. I told you earlier that our continent is in construction. We are on chantier. And if you look at what's going on home, the cartography is that most of the things that are being built in Africa is built by somebody else, you know, our own continent.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the big, le big chantier, all the travel, all the, you know, the work that's been happening in the areas of infrastructure. Most of the infrastructure works, whether it's in airports, whether in the train stations, like in Senegal, for example, the train stations were built by the French. You look at the airports, all the big airports in Africa is not built by no African. It's usually not even run by Africans. It's usually the Chinese are doing that, or the French are doing it, or the or Turkey is doing it. Like the Senegal airport is run by the Turkish government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at our ports, usually it's French taking care of it, or the most of our ports are being run by French companies, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, you know, those kind of countries that are coming to do the work for us. That's infrastructure. You go through education, all the schools that are being built are usually becoming like les dons, you know, gifts coming from, you know, China and other countries, and they build it from their money, and also the labor is being done by them. Same thing for agriculture. Most of the food that we eat now is go beyond, because not only they used to farm and bring us, now they're buying the land of Africa. Many countries, the Chinese, the Turkey, and all those countries, Spain, France, buying the land because of our edible land, because of the energy that we have, but also the young people, and then we have electricity, the solar, 300-something days a year. So they now buying that to do it there. So if you look at all the spectrum, the transformation of our natural resources have been done by somebody else, exploring the natural resources, gas, oil, you know, gold, diamonds, all that's been somebody else doing it. Basically, we live in a continent where we are rent. We don't own our own continent. Like, you live in your own house, but you don't own it. You have to pay rent. Basically, that's what's happening in the continent. And to me, the best way we can change that stigma, what's happening, is to educate this younger generation to understand what's at stake, but to have the skills necessary to compete in their own home first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If we are going to go be an oil company, we need to train younger generation how to explore, how to manage, and how to protect the resources that we're going to have in these countries. If you don't do it, somebody else is going to have to do it. The same thing in infrastructure. We have to educate our young people, build the schools on skills training. Before, they only want to do 4 or 5 year degrees. Today, we can build more skills training in Africa. We don't have enough menuisiers. We don't have enough carpenters. We don't have enough, you know, masons, qualified masons who can build even build a house. Most of our houses are being built by somebody else, or the ones who are building them, they're not qualified. So it's always some issues that we're having on that.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have the Indians and the Turkish that are coming in to build high rises and et cetera in Abidjan, in Dakar, and all that stuff. So we need more skills training, electrician, plumbery, you know, skills workers all over the continent, so they can build something. They can build the continent. They can be at the hardcore of the transformation of this continent that's happening right now. Because as we talk, the continent is being transformed. And if you guys stay overseas, you don't see it. But us who live in there, we see it every day. Bridges are being built. Airports are being built, roads are being built, hospitals are being built every day, schools are being built. But the question we should all be asking is, who are building them? It's not us. I can answer that question. Now, what we need to do is come back to what you're doing here. It's education and training skills. That's why when I came home, most of my focus is in education. First, what I first did is in farming, after I started farming, I saw most of our young people needed to farm. But they don't know how. First, farming is not attractive. Second, if they have to farm, how to do it? You know, even those who are farming, most of them never been to farming school, because most of the farming schools we have was a traditional farming universities. It's very hard to access. When you access it, it's more theory, nothing practical. So what I did is I built an institute inside the farm, Jevzon Farming Institute, and Leadership and Agricultural School. And I attract young people in the farm to teach them about farming in short, extensive courses that are really quick, that they have the notion and what they need to learn right away. In a week to a month, you can be an expert to what you need to do and go and practice it. Those are skills that we're teaching them. Beyond that, I saw the need to train young people in entrepreneurship and leadership. I built a school for that. And I saw an academy that needs to be built, a digital academy, because it's not enough schools that are teaching AI, that are teaching data science, that are teaching cybersecurity and everything about digital. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, it's time. I took my vacation home in Sali, Senegal, and I turned it into a digital academy called the Give One Digital Academy. What did we do there? We teach young people about artificial intelligence. We train them about cybersecurity, the importance of cybersecurity in this day and age. Most of the young people that I bring into the digital academy, brother, that I give scholarship to, nobody pays. Everybody's scholarship housed, and then they are lodge and lodging and housing. Everything is paid for. Every week we got 25 students. None of them ever come to say, I learned this about anywhere in any school. That means there's the first time for them to learn about the danger that's in their telephones and how to secure their data. They don't know. You know what I'm saying? But who's doing all of that stuff? Nobody. It's not enough teaching in technology. It's not enough teaching in cybersecurity, you know? And this is extremely important for us. So this is why I'm going all the way in training young people, educating as much as we can. And I think we need more young people, more people who are able to come and also invest in education. Because people think, you know, education is just in Africa. We think education is just a thing for the government to take care of. But it's not a thing for us, the private sector.
Yes.
Many of us come in, we invest in, I'm saying, we housing, we invest in farming, we invest in et cetera, but we leave education alone to government. And I don't think we should do that. We should be able to also to see where are the needs that we can collide, where we can connect what we've learned overseas to come and bring it in as our part of contribution when it comes to the educational system to revolutionize. Africa's educational system needs to be revolutionized completely to catch up because we are so behind. Oh, yeah. And what I see going on right now with AI, with ChatGPT and all those things going on, you know, with the, you know, metaverse and all of those things, it's going to revolutionize the world. Everything is going to be digital. And until now, we are 600 million Africans who live under without electricity. It's twice the United States. So forget internet. They don't even have electricity. How are you going to compete?
So, you know, it's now our job and our part to do the work, to go back in Africa because we have the knowledge. Right now, I'm teaching people here to learn how to make an app, a normal app, but I'm teaching as well how to make an app without code using AI now. Right. It's a new program that I'm bringing into the world, but I'm really focusing in Europe and America. So now my job is to give this same program to Africa, but make it accessible, you know, because they don't have the same, necessarily the same power to buy things like we buy in Europe or North America, but it's just that to make all this content, all this information accessible to them. And that's why the fact that you came here and you had some conversations, it's really show me how it's important to not forget a continent.
Oh,
and
okay.
Really like, even like focus only on bringing more knowledge and more tools for the Africa, because here everything is already almost done, you know, and technology is going very fast, you know. It was TikTok, now it's ChatGPT.
Yeah, it moves fast.
It's going crazy, but us, the people there, you don't have, you say even internet is not ready yet. So I think it's our job for all of us here in Europe or North America to now bring our knowledge back to the continent.
Of course. You know, we can never forget where we come from. And it's extremely important to be a part of what's happening back home. And you know, moving, being a part of what's going on home and participate doesn't mean you just have to move, pack your bag and leave. If you can do it, it's good. But today with technology from here, you can participate.
Yes.
I have, for example, in my technology school, young people here in Toronto and in Montreal also, in France, who are teaching the kids from the internet every Saturday and Sunday about data, about cybersecurity, about digital marketing, and etc. Donc, from here, you can participate. But if you can be there, it's even better because the transformation of this continent is going to happen regardless.
Yes.
You're saying? Now, the question is it going to happen with us or without us? And what I see living there now after 15 years in the United States is that actually it's happening now without us. And I tend to say, what's going to happen is you come back a few years from now, you come back home, you become a, you know, locataire chez toi. You know, no, because everything will be built. Because here in Canada, in the United States, as you said, everything is already done.
Yeah.
There's nothing revolutionary that you can do here. It's an, only in the space of technology, but everything else is already done. So this is a case I always make for our people in the diaspora to... I know you never forgotten home, and I know you always have that close to you, but I'm here to reinforce to you that home needs you. Without you, we cannot do it. We definitely need you to bring your knowledge, to bring your competency, to bring your know-how, to transfer it, but also to come create where we are, or create from here for home, so that way also home can have something to show for it, and then that can be beneficial today. And even in business, it makes sense to do business in Africa today as well, you know.
That's why now, Tom, I come to the topic about collaborating and partnership. I do see with you that you give a lot of like, importance to the collaboration and the partnership. And I really like your vision about that, because a lot of us, our brothers, are doing stuff alone. But they don't understand that it's by creating partnership, collaborations, that you go very fast. and as well that you can do bigger and bigger, bigger project, bigger companies, bigger things. You know?
Exactly. Mm.
So I really want you to give your talk about this and make people understand the power of collaboration.
I think they already understand that. You know, I think it's deeper than just understanding it. I think everyone knows that we go faster, you know, together, or in one we can go slow, we can get there, but we can get stronger and faster if we're together. So the understanding is not the problem. We all know that. But I think for us, it's beyond that. It's deeper because of our history. We have this fear of the other.
Mm-hmm.
We have the lack of trust of one another. And then this because of our history, where we come from. We always have this history that stayed with us, that we don't trust the other black man or the sister. You know, I'd rather do business with X, Y, and Z than doing business with my brother because I don't trust my brother. It's hard to say, but it's a reality. If, example, today you go to Africa, you want to do business, and you have this beautiful company that you got here, successful here in Canada, you jump in Senegal or you go to Congo, your home country, and you want to do business, you go to see any politician to try to show them what you've done here, they're going to listen to you and they're going to ask, okay, who are you working for? Who is the partner? And make it very difficult for you to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have one of your assistants here who's a young white guy that you bring with him, and to put him up front, he will get the contract ASAP.
Oh, yeah?
It's the truth.
Wow.
He will get it just because they trust the other person more than they trust their own people.
Wow.
And that is not only government. It's among us here in the diaspora. You lived it. I've lived it. Everybody else lived it. We know we should work together. We know that's how we're going to get stronger. We know that's the strength we need to compete in this globalized world, that every community is getting stronger together. But we still remain to be the weakest community in the world, with the strongest, the richest natural resources in the world, the richest community in the world, and the poorest in the world, only because of one thing: we are divided.
Yeah.
So this is actually the reason why I launched this organization called Afro Global Connect around the world, which is helping to bring people like you together, to be able to do business together, to be able to connect in the political level, economic level, social level, where if I meet a young man like you in Brazil, I want to make sure you guys are connected to do business or to get to know each other. The same thing that I want to meet in the United States, in France, in other countries, in Africa. So I think with small little initiatives like that, we get to create change the same way I talked about in the beginning, on a grassroots level. These things would not happen overnight. It's not going to change overnight because it's been installed on us for a long time, way before slavery, through the slavery, then through the Jim Crow laws, then through colonization, and etc. So it will. We are very resilient people. We went through all of these things I've named, but we're still here. And we got to know also that that's a part of our history that we need to work on to change that for the next generations to come. This is why I come to you. I think this is why you open your doors to me as well.
Yes.
And this is why we got to do it for everybody else. And do not expect that to happen from somewhere else. It has to happen from each one of us to be able to look at another brother and say, okay, I'm good at this, you're good at this. Let's build a joint venture together. And we're all going to win together and put our egos together. That's for all we're able to do that, you know, the future will be bright.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
The last topics is going to be about almost everything that you said. It's about the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we have a lot of smart, inspiring people in our community, but there is something missing about knowing their story. Me and you had a conversation about the fact that today, with the power of social media, you can use your camera, your phone, your video to make your story pop all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what's the reason why people don't share their story? I mean, on our community? What's the fact that people don't understand that a story can, like, just skyrocket business?
There's a power in storytelling, you know. And This all comes back to what we were talking about earlier, how, you know, we have to revisit our history so we can understand some of these scars that we need to get rid of, you know. If you go to the doctor and you don't want to tell him what's not going well for you, it's going to be hard for the doctor to know what's wrong with you. You have to tell him what your symptoms are. And our symptoms, when it comes to this particular thing, you know, is that we, in our history, we have that problem that we need to face. I talked about example of the trust problem.
Trust problem, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But now, when it comes to this topic you just named, we also have to figure out, you know, how can we, as a people, tell our own story? Because every story we've gotten was written by us, for us to accept. Somebody always telling the story of the African people. You know, this is why I went to writing. I decided to tell my own story so my children tomorrow, the younger people, can relate. You know, if all of us, because everyone has a story, use the story to sparkle hope, to give hope, to give espoir to young people, we can really, really start setting the stone of what the next generation will be. Because there's power in storytelling. Mm-hmm. All this American dream that you see today is all about a story that they've created, an ideal of a dream that they sold to the world that people believed in, and this is what the United States is about today. They utilized Hollywood, movies, storytelling, music, storytelling, and then the entire world buy into this ideology of a free America, American dream, and the land of, you know, opportunities where everything becomes real in New York, the concrete jungle, and etc. But then you go down there, you see that it's none different between the United States and Canada and, you know, these places. The only thing different is that the storytelling, you know? So that's why I think we've got to go more into production to create big production companies. We're doing very well with the music now, with the Afrobeats, which is unbelievable because it's selling our music, our culture, a part of who we are, to the world.
Yes.
And if it's the same way we are doing now with Nigeria's Afrobeat to the world, if we're able to do that in movies, in storytelling, in writing, and then in documentaries, in films, not only for Africans, but to the world, like just what Nollywood did, what Hollywood did, what India has done, we can take that space because we have a lot to tell to the world.
Yes.
And this should be our next step, next journey.
We have some great idea about that. I think that people are going to know more very soon.
Of course.
And
inshallah.
When I did Moko, when I wanted to make the switch to a new version, a new platform, I had this idea about focusing on music artists, making the documentary or the storytelling video, and just focusing on that and put this somewhere on the platform. Now, the fact that you had the conversations, it's bringing me even more ideas and more opportunities that we're going to work on. But yeah, everyone has a story. It's just about making this story visible to the right people, to the global, and people gonna know you, and people buy your story. I mean, if you have a business, you have a project, you can have the best idea that you want, but if people don't connect with you, if they don't understand your story, it's gonna be difficult. Same for me. The fact that people wanna work with me, wanna like take my education program, everything, is because I have a story with the Moko app. People know me as the guy that did the Moko app music, and he's a guy that we can use to make our own app or anything. It's related to tech and apps world. But all of this is a story.
Storytelling.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very great podcast, John.
It's a pleasure.
Very powerful, inspiring.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to finish with some questions I'm going to ask you. The first one is, who is your most inspiring entrepreneur in the tech world?
Tech world, I got a couple of them, but I like, you know, the craziness and the boldness of Elon Musk. You know, because I like people who can take risks, and he's one of them. So he is a risk taker.
Perfect.
He's African too, so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Expect ChatGPT. What's your the most, the app that you use the most on your phone?
Well, I use WhatsApp a lot because it's how I communicate with my team, my families. Mm-hmm. Most of my communication is through WhatsApp, so I really like WhatsApp. I use it a lot, you know. So that's the most one that I use the most.
Okay.
The one that I use the most.
And the last question will be on social media aspects, which one do you use the most? Either TikTok, Instagram, Facebook? I mean, I know that WhatsApp is part of social media, but I put this more in communication. But where are you more active? Like,
I'm between Facebook and Instagram, still very conservative with the TikTok. Mm-hmm. But it's between the two, Instagram and Facebook. I like Instagram a lot because of the images. And Facebook because of where most of my community are. So I go zigzag between these two.
Perfect. Yeah. Nice. So that's what a really great podcast.
Thank you.
Is there anything that you want to say about your next conference, your next project or anything?
Well, it's good. I'm just saying that to everyone listening that whatever you dream about is valid, is possible. There's no big dream. There's no extraordinary dream. Whatever you think of, you can realize. I just thought about this idea 15 years ago, that went too fast. I can't believe it. It was a small idea in Ohio, then Washington, D.C. And now, 15 years later, it's in 34 countries. Hundreds of thousands of young people's lives has changed that I look at today with pride. Mm-hmm. You have some young ministers in Morocco, in Abidjan, in Senegal, government officials in the United States, you know, business owners who got there. Employees around the world today, nonprofit organization, engage young people in all sectors of life. And when I look at them and I look at where we are today, it reminds me, it should remind you too, that everything is possible.
Yes.
As long as you're willing to work for your dreams, there's no limits that you can reach. So get up the couch, go out there and shake the world and change it. Everything remains possible. God bless you. And thank you for having me here. It was a pleasure.
Thank you too for these inspiring moments.
Thank you.
And see you very soon, John.
Thank you. God bless.
Thanks.
Peace.